You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. To the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any unions involved. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. Tonight's show is underwritten by Greater Kansas City Building and Construction Trades Unions and Teamsters Local 41. The KC Building Trades Council, the men and women who build KC. Teamsters Local 41 is the largest Teamster local in the Kansas City area and represents approximately 6,000 members in many industries, including freight, UPS, dairy, food and beverage, bakery, warehouse, car haul, car dealers, car rental, parking and show work. We help workers and their families achieve and live the American dream. Our members are hardworking, patriotic, caring, family-oriented, and civic-minded, and we proudly support our men and women in uniform that put their lives on the line every day to protect the rights, our rights and freedom. And the Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI thank our underwriters for their support. On tonight's show, the Green New Deal promises environmental transformation and jobs. But the AFL-CIO and energy unions fear lost jobs and only empty promises of a just transition. We'll explore these issues on tonight's show. Then, civil rights legacy Fannie Lou Hamer, who said she was tired of being sick and tired her whole life. Then she did something about it. She'll be remembered by her cousin. In the news, Dems introduce new labor law reform bill, and Moore Squared marches against the KCK cops. And there will be no feature at the end of the show because it's pledge drive and you can call in your pledge to 888-931-0901. Now for the news.
And now the news from our side, June 6, 2019. The West Virginia State Senate on Monday passed a sweeping education overhaul bill that would deem teacher strikes unlawful. The Senate voted 18-15 for the bill. It also allows for charter schools for the first time in the state. Think Progress reports that both Democrats and the state chapter of the American Federation of Teachers saw the strike ban as retaliation for teacher walkouts that took place earlier this year and last year. The bill would allow schools to fire workers for striking and withhold pay on strike days, as well as forbid county superintendents from closing schools due to strikes. The bill is ironically called the Student Success Act, and it will go to the West Virginia House on June 17th. The governor, Jim Justice, has been ambivalent about signing it. He said, "We're at a very, very difficult impasse." Teachers, of course, are not ambivalent. They protested at the state capitol all weekend.
American Postal Workers Local 67 in Kansas City is asking people to support H.R. 2382, the USPS Fairness Act, which has just been introduced in Congress and has been sent to committee. This legislation would repeal in full the onerous pre-funding of retiree health care benefits mandated by Congress in 2006. The mandate requires the Postal Service to pre-fund retiree health care in advance for 75 years, meaning it's funding the retirement of people who haven't even been born yet. The mandate is accountable for 92% of the Postal Service's net losses since 2007 and is a constant threat to the financial sustainability of the Postal Service. Makes you wonder why it was put in place, maybe to pave the way for privatization? It is used as a pretext, really, to call for privatization. The union is asking people to call 844-402-1001 to contact their member of Congress, or just call your member of Congress and ask them to co-sponsor H.R. 2382, the USPS Fairness Act. They are asking union members to contact friends and co-workers and ask them to call their representatives as well. Solidarity.
Yesterday, the KC non-for-profit Moore Squared had a demonstration in Kansas City, Kansas, to speak out against ongoing injustices committed by the Kansas City, Kansas Police Department. They allege that police officers commit sexual violence, particularly against women of color. Also, that the department routinely fails to properly investigate and covers up illegal behavior. Moore Squared made three demands of Unified Government Mayor David Alvey. 1. Immediately terminate Chief of Police Terry Ziegler. 2. Ensure immediate investigations of former Detective Golubsky by the KBI, the FBI, and the Department of Justice, the United States Department of Justice. 3. Quickly and fully secure funding for a bilingual hotline independent of the Kansas City, Kansas Police Department, so victims can come forward safely. The KCK Police Department posted a statement on its website, which said they won't comment on ongoing lawsuits and that their complaint procedure meets commonly accepted standards.
Every day, the Trump administration and its labor law enforcement authorities, like the National Labor Relations Board, push a little harder to erode workers' rights and expand the authority of employers. Now the AFL-CIO and congressional Democrats are pushing back with a bill. The Protecting the Right to Organize Act, or PRO Act, is a sweeping labor reform bill that would reverse decades of Republican-backed policies meant to crush labor unions. The bill was introduced earlier this month by Virginia Democratic Representative Bobby Scott. It would get rid of state right to work laws. Hooray! It would also allow workers to sue employers who illegally interfere with unionizing efforts. Instead of forcing them to take all their complaints to the NLRB, the new bill would also let the board hit employers with fines if they break the law. Right now, there's currently no financial penalty for employers who illegally fire workers who are trying to unionize, for example. According to Vox, just these provisions alone in the bill would significantly shift power from businesses to employees. If passed, it would mark the biggest change to U.S. labor law since Congress gave American workers the right to unionize back in 1935. The goal is to cut down on the bureaucracy that's involved when workers try to form labor unions and to penalize employees or companies that try to stop them. For example, it would bar businesses from making employees attend so-called captive audience meetings, which bash unions, and it would require both sides to quickly mediate disputes that often stall unionizing and contract negotiations. The bill would also let the National Labor Relations Board hit companies with monetary penalties each time they fire someone for lawfully unionizing and reinstate fired workers while their case is pending. Right now, the AFL-CIO is pushing members to get the representatives in Congress to sign on as sponsors. Of course, no one thinks that even if it passes the House, that the Senate would pass it or Trump sign it. But as support for unions increases and strikes are on the upswing, many think that last August's rout of right to work in Missouri shows a sea change for labor. So they're pushing this bill. It's H.R. 2474. You can write your member of Congress and tell them to get on board. Emmanuel Cleaver has already signed on. Charisse Davids has not. The news tonight was read by Chris Mann, Judy Ansel, Jeff Humfeld, and I'm Jen Zaman.
Okay, and it's Pledge Drive. And sitting with me here in the studio is Chris Mann and Jen Zaman, and maybe even Jeff Humfeld from the famous Jaws of Justice show. Jeff is a former Heartland Labor Forum volunteer. And we all know there's power in a union, right, guys?
Amen.
Amen. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So KKFI is joining the crowd with its new Power in a T-shirt. And it's a gold T-shirt. It's got a big fist on it, which has KKFI on it. Oh. And we know we got 100,000 watts of power. So you can get this T-shirt for $90 one time or $7.50 a month just by calling us and pledging to Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI. What's that number, Jen?
It's 888-931-0901. Once again, that is 888-931-0901.
And you can also get the fist on a tote bag.
We've got two tote bags. One's got the fist on it, and then the other one has our logo.
How much
and you
is
can
that,
get both.
Chris?
Oh, this is $90 one time, $7.50 a month.
And for two tote bags.
Two tote bags. Uh-huh.
Yeah, Chris, I know
Whoa,
you I know
I'm
you got to get
now.
That. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
That
you
is...
got two hands, you need two.
Yeah. That's right. That's
and
right.
Fashionable.
Yeah. Very
Definitely.
Fashionable tote bags. And we have this special deal. Jeff, you want to tell us about the whole troika of the combo package?
The combo package.
Makes me hungry.
Yes, that does come with fries. You can get the T-shirt with the fist on it. You can get both of those tote bags. And also a reserved orchestra, two seats, for the
Collaborations
concert. And that's really an interesting concept, because what they do is they have local groups and local artists work together, people that don't normally work together, to put together a short set. And they do that with there's a whole list of folks here that are going to be doing it.
Yeah, it's a great show.
So that would be a $25 a month if you would become a sustaining member, and that is something that we really encourage for you to give monthly. It helps the radio station get by every month. In other words, we know how much money we got coming in for sure, and can budget for that. Okay. Or a one-time donation of $300.
Okay, and that number again is 888-931-0901, or you can go online at kkfi.org and make your pledge. Call us now. Now for Chris, it's your show.
Hold the fort, for we are coming. Union workers, be strong. Side by side, we'll battle onward. Victory will come. We meet today. Cause and raise our voices high. We join our hands in union strong, to battle or to die. Hold the fort, for we are coming. Union workers, be strong. Side by side we'll battle onward. Victory will.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. My name is Chris Mann. The song we've just heard was Hold the Fort, sung by folk singer, unionist, and environmental activist Joe Uline. Tonight, we'll focus on the debate within the organized labor movement about the Green New Deal. As a result of listening to labor leader clips while doing this show, I have a greater respect for the depth of this debate. Richard Tremka, president of the AFL-CIO, states, "We welcome the call for labor rights and dialogue with labor, but the Green New Deal resolution is far too short on specific solutions that may speak to the jobs of our members and the critical sectors of our economy It is not rooted in an engineering-based approach and makes promises that are not achievable or realistic. We will not accept proposals that could cause immediate harm to the millions of our members and their families. We will not stand by and allow threats to our members' jobs and their families' standard of living go unanswered. Recently, in Los Angeles, unionists marched to protest the mayor's proposals to make Los Angeles carbon-free. This is a dilemma for Democrats who support the Green New Deal. Could the rift be an advantage for Trump in his re-election bid? Joe Uline, president of the Labor Network for Sustainability, said the Green New Deal federal job guarantee provision has been a long-standing goal for unions and marks one of the biggest organizing opportunities for labor since the original New Deal. In an interview, Joe speaks about how he became familiar and sympathetic to environmental issues.
I started at a young age working in an aluminum mill in central Pennsylvania and joined the Steelworkers Union. That mill was wiped out by Hurricane Agnes, which devastated central Pennsylvania in 1971. And so then I went to work as a laborer and on flood cleanup at first, and then I found myself working at Three Mile Island in the construction of that power plant. And every day I went to work, I crossed a picket line of environmental groups who didn't want the power plant to be built. And they had a point. Like, it's right next to the airport, and the cooling towers weren't designed to withstand the impact of a Boeing 707, which was the largest jet at that time. And they had other reasons, and I understood that and sympathized with them. At the same time, it was the best job I ever had. My union, however, had a bumper sticker that said, "Hungry and out of work, eat an environmentalist." And that I didn't like. I had grown up along the banks of the Great Lake Erie at a time when we swam in the lake and we ate the yellow perch, and then they posted all the signs saying you can't swim in a lake, you can't eat the perch. So by 17, I had a developing environmental awareness given that upbringing. So I objected to the bumper sticker, and that didn't go over well. But what that did was, as I pursued my life's work in the trade union movement, I did so with very strong environmental convictions that stem not just from the fact that we have to take care of this precious planet, but that it's in our self-interest as trade unionists to take care of this precious planet. So that's kind of how I got started, at least on the larger environmental question.
National Nurses United speak about climate change from a health perspective. Several nurses at the Climate Change March in Washington, D.C. are heard in this next clip.
The effects on the of environmental pollution on our lungs is quite severe, and we all breathe. So nurses see this in our work every day. I've seen, as a pediatric cancer nurse, I see rare, deadly forms of cancer and more of them. It's really shocking.
The biggest thing for us right now is asthma. We're seeing longer hospital stays, more complicated stays. People who work for oil don't think there's anything wrong, and we really need to educate them, the society.
Our next audio clip is from John Forster, who is the co-chair of DC-37's Climate Justice Committee. And DC stands for District Council Local 37, which is a public employee union. DC 37 is New York's largest public employee union that represents 125,000 members and 50,000 retirees. Their members help make New York run by working in over 1,000 titles, everything from accountants to zookeepers. John points out that workers are not always given contracts and the need for DC 37 union to be at the table.
I just want to say the potential, we have a tremendous potential to create good union jobs as we transition to a clean energy economy and away from the very fossil fuels that are promoting the global warming and CO2 emissions that are slowly strangling the earth and ourselves ultimately to death if we don't do something about it. However, we as unions, to make that happen, we have to be involved in these policy decisions and in these debates. We have to push the administration to make these retrofits mandatory. We have to advocate that these jobs should be done by private and public sector union workers, and that city workers are absolutely vital in reviewing, tracking, and enforcing the work, but also that the new hires are done in the communities that need the jobs the most here in New York. As the saying goes, if we as unions are not at the table, then we're probably on the menu. And that is an issue. We've got to be there time and time again. We could use city employees to review the design, the construction supervision, the enforcement, the maintenance operation. They could mandate local hiring. They would use the IBEW and other unions' apprentice programs to bring people in. We could use the very civil service titles that we have here at DC 37 to bring people in to do this work. Again, in our communities, in our low-income communities, in our communities of color that most need these jobs. And the city would end up owning the system in the end and not having a privately owned system on top of a public building. This transition to clean energy is terribly important, but so too, we have a great opportunity to do it the right way, to do it using union labor, building in-house capability that will serve the city for years to come, and creating jobs for New Yorkers who really need them. And it's important not only in the building of solar energy, but in the entire transition to a clean energy economy. Solar on private buildings are going to need oversight and are going to need enforcement. The institution of geothermal systems and heat pumps are going to need that kind of insight. And just to give you some idea where we're at on that, St. Patrick's Cathedral just built 10 geothermal pumps that will heat and cool St. Patrick's. It's real stuff that's happening. And the move towards offshore wind as well. I mean, the tremendous turbines that will be needed for that will be certainly built in the private sector, but we've got to gear up to provide the infrastructure. So things like the Brooklyn Marine Terminal have to be completely refurbished and run. And those are many jobs, again, in both public and private sector unions that would be participatory in that. If done right, the transition to a clean energy economy has the potential to create thousands of new jobs in both the public and private sector. However, creating new jobs is not the only reason that DC 37 and other unions need to be involved in the transition to clean energy, because environmental justice is equally important in the fight against climate change.
John Forster reflects in this next clip about the work he's done in DC 37 to encourage workers and his union to become involved in the fight for climate change. He also has a vision of how it should work for justice for Black and minority workers. He seems to be saying that unless workers are involved, climate change cannot be stopped.
So I joined the host committee of the People's Climate March in March of 2014 and worked with that host committee diligently up until the march. After the march, we were faced with some new dynamics. Several of the groups that were involved with that and actually in leadership positions were refocusing to some degree and pushing, as Eddie mentioned, on the legislative agenda and encapsulated in many ways within Climate Works for All, which Joss is going to talk about. But there were also many organizations. We had, in the process of organizing for the march, what I think was so essential and which I hope is part of the message that we can bring here tonight, was we broke down the silos and the differences between the environmental organizations, the environmental justice organizations, the faith organizations, labor, and community organizations. And it was so important to build the trust, and that happened as we organized for the march, and to build the camaraderie and the sense of collective struggle. And we have to continue that. We have to continue that in New York. We have to continue that here in Philadelphia. We have to continue that across the country. That is where we have to go. As far as the People's Climate Movement, which came out of the People's Climate March, we have now moved forward to, we have an organizer on staff, we have a dedicated core leadership, we've got
you know, your typical subcommittees, legislative, community outreach, fundraising, communication, those kinds of things. The bottom line is that we are fighting for racial, economic, and environmental justice, and that that is what we have to continue to do together and collectively. We have, as the PCM New York, we've joined other struggles. We fought against the Port Ambrose, which is a liquid natural gas plant that they want to open in the middle of Long Island Sound. We've worked with Black Lives Matter. We held a forum in New York on legislative initiatives, including, as Eddie had mentioned, the reduction of CO2 about 80% by 2050. I will parenthetically note that PCM New York has now decided to get even more aggressive on that, and we're calling for 100% clean energy by 2030. You know, you have to push these things, right? I mean, when people started talking about fighting for a $15 minimum wage, nobody believed it was possible, and look at where we are now in $15. We also fought around things like legislative relief for things like rapid bus transit. And why is that so important? Partly because in New York City, the subway system is our Achilles heel. I mean, it went down for 10 days with Sandy, but we were lucky to bring it back in 10 days. And if it goes down for 6 months, New York becomes a different kind of city. And it is vulnerable to sea surges. And frankly, it's a huge issue, and so that's one of the reasons they're pushing for bus transit. Indian Point nuclear plant. We, as DC-37, have not taken a position on that, and it's a tough issue for unions. We've got 2,000 union workers at the plant. And there's an issue of what would happen if we close the plant, even though I believe it's the right thing to do. But that's my position, and we have yet to come to that as a union. So part of the challenge here is the issue of just transition. And that really has to do with it. If we're going to shift to clean energy, and we're going to also have some displacements. We're going to have displacement of workers in coal and oil and nuclear power. And we've got to provide provisions for that. We've got to provide free training. We've got to provide support while that training is going on, and meaningful support. We've got to provide enhanced retirement possibilities. I mean, we have got to deal with that as we deal with the environmental issue. And we've got to deal with it not maybe just for the workers, but also for the residents, because when you have something like Indian Point Plant, it's a major point of production within that town. And people live on that. So that has to be taken into account. So while working on the march, I also put together a climate justice committee within DC-37. And that has been also, that continues to be fledgling, I have to say. I mean, we've continued, we mobilized, we turned out people for the march. But we still need to find the unifying issue, the one that kind of grabs and gives us traction on this. We've endorsed Climate Works for All. Climate jobs is a huge, huge issue for unions. We've got to do that. But the environmental justice issue, in my mind, is just as important within unions as is to jobs. Our members live in the Lower East Side and Hunts Point and Red Hook and the Far Rockaways. That's where our members live. Our members are 80% members of color. We have an average salary of $28,000 a year. Our members were devastated by Sandy. And then, of course, there are fewer resources in those communities to build it back. So it's hit on both sides. But our members were also first responders. So we staffed the hospitals. We ran the water filtration plants as they got flooded out. We ran the 911 system. And we walked through the buildings, the NYCHA buildings, New York City Housing Authority buildings. And our own headquarters was closed for 9 months because it was completely flooded out by Sandy. 9 months we went down. And yet, for some reason, we're still not quite there. And, you know, it's still a little bit like pulling teeth on this. And I think in many ways, that is the issue for labor in general on the climate issue. So we have ongoing labor participation within PCM New York. We've got the Professional Staff Congress, New York State Nurses, Musicians, DC-37, IBEW, Local 3, CWA 1180. But I think the participation is still not what we want yet. It's the PCM New York is a broad-based coalition. It is a tremendous source of information in terms of legislative actions on the state, city, and national levels. We're able to join in local battles, which has been very important.
Even though our radio time is almost ended, the story's not over. The AFL-CIO in Maine has endorsed the Green New Deal for Maine and has had labor involved from the beginning in its planning for climate change. Bruce Hamilton, International Vice President of Amalgamated Transit Union, warns that the 2019 New York Labor History Association's annual spring conference. He says, what we need to understand is the climate struggle is class struggle. Workers really do want to engage in radical action with a clear chance of making their lives better. A tool that working people have used in the past has been, at least temporarily successful, is a general strike. It's something we should never take off the table. Hamilton spoke these words recognizing that the market-driven energy sector will never voluntarily make changes that are needed. Our final clip features Fritz Edler. Edler is a lifelong rail worker who attended the April 29th, 2017 Climate March in D.C. He ends our show with a quiet plea for labor to be involved with climate change. Thank you for listening to tonight's show.
My name is Fritz Edler. I come from the Washington, D.C. area. I live here in Washington, and I'm a career-long railroad worker, a member of the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen, which is part of the Teamsters. I represented one of the largest divisions of the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen on the Amtrak system. It's located right here in Washington, D.C. I'm here today at the Climate March because one of the things that we've learned the hard way and through paying attention is that the future of the planet and the health of the people here, as well as the future of our own industry and our own people and the quality of life issues for them and transportation, is tied to whether or not we are successful in making railroad the green transportation alternative in the future. And I'm pleased to be joined with all these, you know, hundreds of thousands of folks, not just here, but across the continent, across the world, that understand that sticking with the old ways is not gonna, actually working people are gonna be the ones that are gonna be differentially hurt by the path that we're on. We took the lead, and I said the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen here in Washington, in going out and winning a federal grant for environmental protection for the purpose of taking a particular type of switching locomotive, of nine of which operate just down the street at Washington Terminal, that is a particularly bad actor in terms of pollution and the effects that causes for the community as well as for my own people, my own members. And with that grant, millions of dollars, we were able to pioneer, and we were able to force the railroad, kicking and screaming, along with various local partners, to make that the way that they would do replacement for that technology. So because we were in a leading position in that, by the union, in a leading position in that process, we were able to make sure that the specific needs of the people who work on that equipment were also addressed at the same time. An unheard of thing for our industry. And we had to make this point to our own people and explain to them that we either take the lead on making the railroad the green alternative for the future, or we'll be swept away. And there are plenty of examples of where that happens. Degradation and even loss. And we could be in the situation of having to beg for just regular things. But we can, and we have proven we can, use all the different tools to be able to make the environmental future, the green future on the railroad and in general, the way that we'll protect our members' interests in the future.
K
KKFI thanks Beer Kitchen for feeding our volunteers today. Beer Kitchen features creative American comfort food and craft beers located in Westport. For more information, visit beerkitchenkc.com. KKFI thanks Beer Kitchen for feeding our volunteers today. Beer Kitchen features creative American comfort food and craft beers located in Westport. For more information, visit beerkitchenkc.com.
Hey everyone, this is Bill Sundahl again, telling you it is time for a Champions Challenge. That's right. Right now is the best time you can call and donate, or go online and donate. Support KKFI and get your donation doubled right now. So the host will tell you all about who the champion is and how much they're thrown down on the table that they're willing to match, and of course how long the time frame you have to get that done. So it's a perfect time to support KKFI, your community radio station. It truly is your station. We are working very hard around here to honor that and make sure that we are the type of station that you're willing to support, that you value what we do and why we do it, and that we can remain independent, and this is how we do it. So it's a perfect time to double your support right now. So that information we still need is, how much is the champions match, and how long do we have to make it happen, and who's that champion?
Okay, and the clock starts now. Jen, you have a clock? All right. Well, it is starting, and this is a champion challenge to support KKFI and, of course, the Heartland Labor Forum. And big shout-out to Michael Savoir. Michael, it's time to donate. Call us at 888-931-0901. And, of course, Michael is a Teamster, and we would love to hear from other Teamsters. But any union member will do. Any working person will do. 888-931-0901. And why should we do this? And labor form. We love to tell you about working people. We love to tell you about how our economy is being manipulated, bring you some talking heads who can explain it all to you, and talk about hope and activism, which is a big thing we really like to do because we know it's possible to change the world. And if you believe it's possible to change the world, you need to be informed. The way you get informed is KKFI, and it's listener-sponsored. The reason is we don't have advertising. 888-931-0901. How much time left?
We have got 3 minutes and 44 seconds.
You guys out there, you've got 3 minutes and 44 seconds left. We're going to go back to programming, but you know what to do.
Exactly.
888-931-0901.
3.5 minutes.
01.
I'm Mrs. Fannie Lou Hamer, and I farmed on the Marlow Plantation for 18 years. I had charge of keeping up with the time and paying off, and I went down the 31st of August to try to register. And after I had gotten back home, Mr. Marlow told me that I would have to go down and withdraw my registration or leave because they wasn't ready for that in Mississippi. And I said, Mr. Marlow, I'm trying to register for myself. So I had to leave that same night after I had gone down in August. And then I spent one night with Mrs. Tucker. And after about 2 days in September, they shot in the house 15 times, thinking that I was there.
Hey, everyone. This is Bill Sundahl again, telling you it is time for a champion.
Good evening, listeners. Today, I am interviewing Tiona McGrawborn. She is a distant relative of a community organizer and leader of the women's rights and civil rights movements, Fannie Lou Hamer. Have you ever wondered about Fannie Lou Hamer and her extended family? Well, they are still around and coming, continuing on with her legacy. Tiona, she is a very active person. She has made a 15-year career out of working as a paralegal to aid defense lawyers in improving legal system. Tiona is a devoted mother of three wonderful sons, whom she loves to spend her time. Tiona, she's going to give us a brief history about Hamer. As most of you may know or may not know, Hamer was the youngest of 20 children. Fannie Lou Hamer was born in Montgomery County, Mississippi. She picked cotton with her family and was allowed to attend the plantation's one-room schoolhouse, where she discovered her love for reading and poetry. However, at the age of 12, Fanny had to leave school to help support her parents. After being hired as a field secretary by the SNCC in 1963, Hammer attended a citizenship conference in Charleston, South Carolina. That is when her community activist career started. She died in 1977. Tiona, as you know, the Heartland Labor Forum is primarily a show about labor, and that is why I asked you here today to discuss Fannie Lou Hammer's community involvement as it centers around labor. Tiona, you are very active in community affairs and politics, centering around women's rights and the family. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and your ties to Hammer, how you related to her?
Sure. My name is Tiona Magabaray. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. In 2016 and 2018, I was a candidate for state representative of the 75th District, which includes Dalewood, Ferguson, Moline Acres, Castle Point, Blackjack, Jennings, and other parts of unincorporated North County. My dad, Milton McGaw, his mom, Arlene McGaw, her maiden name is Kirkwood, is first cousins with Fannie Lou Hammer. I never was able to meet her, but yes, that's my grandmother's first cousin.
It's good to hear your ancestral relationship. Tiona, you're a millennial, so I have to ask you, Hammer died in 1977. Did you have an opportunity to meet her?
No, I never had a chance to meet her.
What are some of the memories your mom and your family have of Hammer that may not be known to the general public?
Well, a little bit of a distinctive memory is I was born with a paroxysmal deformality of my femur. It's called PPFD. That's the initials for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a recessive gene. So my ancestor, you know, one of my grandchildren or great-grandchildren would be born with this gene, too. So my femur didn't develop all the way, and I wore a prosthetic limb on my right leg. And this recessive gene, Fannie Lou had the same recessive gene, so she also walked with a limp, and her femur didn't develop, not to where she wore prosthesis or anything, but she still had the same recessive gene. So that's something that, you know, a lot of people don't know.
Yes, I wondered about that. When I was doing my research, it was noted that she walked with a limp.
And then I walked with a limp, too. So, yeah, but so when I found that out, and feeling like, why me? Why do I have to be born like this? And it makes it a little bit better to know someone that did the stuff that she has been able to conquer. It gives me hope to know. Mm-hmm. I could be able to do the same thing she's done in life.
Fannie Lou Hammer, she was the youngest of 20 children. The other children, did they have a life that was as significant or in the public eye as Fannie?
No. Not that I'm aware of. I haven't heard anything about that.
But do you think your life, considering how active you are in the community, do you think your life parallels her life, or you think it'll happen sometime in the future?
I definitely do. I'm a member of the Women's Political Caucus, the National Women's Political Caucus.
Well, let us know what all you do in various organizations as it relates to Fannie Lou Hammer.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm on the Policy Council for the St. Louis chapter of the NWPC, and I'm the bylaws chair, and I am within the last couple of years became the co-founder of the Young Professionals Group. What we do is recruit, train, and elect, and try to get young women involved in the political process and kind of teach them what's going on campaigns. So that would kind of parallel with what I've been doing. And I've also been a member of North County Labor, helping them fight right to work when they were fighting that. I've done a lot of work standing on picket lines and things going down with SNCS and things like that. I met some great people out there, you know, fighting for labor.
Okay. In 1964, Hammer, she organized the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, and she was challenging Mississippi's all-white and anti-civil rights delegation to the Democratic National Convention. During that time, Hammer was allowed to address the Credentials Committee, and that session was nationally televised. Hammer, on one account, she wanted to register everyone to become first-class citizens. And if the Freedom Democratic Party was not seated, She said that, "I question America. This is America, the land of freedom and home of the brave, where we will have to sleep with our telephone off the hooks because our lives will be threatened daily because we want to live as decent human beings in America." That was part of her address to the Credentialing Committee. During that time, negotiations were held to allow this organization, the delegates, to be seated at the convention. And when she was refused a compromise that would have prevented two non-voting delegates to be seated, Hammer was asked why she was persisting, and she replied. Do you remember her reply? It's one of the greatest quotes ever. Yeah, she said, "All my life I've been sick and sick and tired. Now I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired." Yes, that's one of the quotes that she's known for. Another quote was, "I know what the pain of hunger is about." That's one of her stronger quotes. And she was just a wonderful speaker. Now, I have a question for you. I noticed that Fannie Lou Hammer cloned the phrase Mississippi appendectomy. Would you like to tell the listeners what that is?
I really don't have a lot of knowledge of that. Like, I wouldn't want to, like, elaborate on it because I don't have a lot of information on it for the listeners.
Doing my research, I found out that in 1961, Hammer was sterilized without her consent when she went to Sunflower County Hospital for a minor surgery to remove a tumor. She was given a hysterectomy at that time against her consent, and she coined a phrase and called it Mississippi appendectomy. And apparently, apparently Mississippi appendectomy was a euphemism for the involuntary or uninformed sterilization of black women, which was common in the South in the 1960s. And Hammer was quoted as saying, "I would say about 6 out of 10 Negro women that go to the hospital are sterilized with the tubes tied against their consent." So that's what we call the Mississippi appendectomy.
Right. I've heard of parts of that, so yes, put two and two together. I did know those things about her, that she was sterilized from my family.
And she adopted two girls. Another thing, while researching Hammer, I noticed that she was one of the founders of the National Women's Political Caucus in 1971. Now, you're also a member of this organization in St. Louis, Missouri. What can you tell us about the organization and its founders?
I can tell you that our founders include prominent women such as Gloria Steinem, former Congresswoman Shirley Chisholm, Bella Azul, I hope I'm saying these names right,
yes,
Dorothy Height, president of the National Council of Negro Women, Jill Ruckelis, U.S. Civil Rights Commissioner.
I remember
Ann
her.
Lewis, political director of Democratic National Committee, Ellie Peterson, former vice chair of the Republican National Committee, LaDonna Harris, Native American rights leader, Liz Carpenter, author, lecturer, and former press secretary for Ms. Lyndon B. Johnson, Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton, former chair of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and Fannie Lou Hamer. And I'll mention currently we have National Women's Political Caucus President Donna Lynn that's coming up. And we have a committee.
When is that coming up? When is that?
National Women's Political Convention, and it's the 24th Bicentennial Convention. It's July the 19th. Through the 21st in St. Louis, Missouri. And our theme is Meet Me in St. Louis.
Wow.
I am on a panel for young leaders, so I'll talk about getting young people involved and, you know, great ideals and stuff like that. So I really kind of relate that to some of the work that Hamer has done in the organization also.
Okay, who are the co-chairs for this convention?
Excuse me?
Who are the co-chairs for the convention?
The co-chairs are Margo McNeil, and Paula Owen Wilmore. So we're excited about that. We were very excited about the convention being in St. Louis this year.
Right. And I hear it's going to be held at the Westin also.
Yes, it'll be at the Westin. They have a train-the-trainer. I will take part in the train-the-trainer, too, and that will open me up to being able to do trainings for campaigns in the state of Missouri.
Think Fannie Lou Hamer would be pleased with the direction that you're going in?
I think she would be pleased that Fannie Lou fought for today because of the National Women's Political Caucus.
Kansas City, we have a stand-up KC. It is using Fannie Lou Hamer as its namesake for a group of low-wage Kansas City women, workers who gather to talk about the issues they face and ways to improve them. That's KC. It's just a wonderful organization to be named after Fannie Lou Hamer. I have a question on voting. On December the 4th, what year was that? 1961, Hamer returned to her hometown to take a literacy test in order to vote. She failed the test and was turned away. Another one of her famous quotes is, she told the registrar, she said, "You'll see me every 30 days till I pass the test." She also said, "I guess if I had any sense, I'd have been a little scared, but what was the point of being scared? The only thing they could do was to kill me, and it kind of seems like they're trying to do a little bit at a time since I can remember as far back." Fannie Lou, she had a very troublesome life as far as battery and beatings. When she was hired as a field secretary by the SNCC in 1963, she attended a citizenship conference in Charleston, South Carolina. And on the way there to Winona, Mississippi, she was refused service inside a cafe. So the highway patrol were called into the establishment. They came in with a bat and beat her. She was taken to the local jail where she was beaten again and brutalized. Hamer was put in a cell where the inmates were told by the police to beat her with a baton. The police made sure that she was held down during most of this attack. Hamer was released in 1963, June 12th. It took her about a month to recover. She was still left with injuries. Does your family ever talk about that?
My grandmother probably talked about it a little bit to my father because back then, you know, she was up and coming, and my family was from, my grandmother was from Mississippi and all of that. So, mm-hmm. You know, my grandmother was really proud that was her cousin and the things that she was doing. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I can remember my dad kind of saying that was really a sad time for her when she went through that. Mm-hmm. And that's all I remember about that.
Tiana, we're going to wrap this up now. As you know, the Heartland Labor Forum is primarily a show about labor, and that's why I asked you here today to discuss Fannie Lou Hamer's community involvement and her legacy as it centers around labor. Tiana, you're very active in community affairs and politics centering around women's rights in the family. I'd like to ask you if you have any closing remarks for our listeners.
Well, the only thing I like to say is I definitely want them to look at the National Women's Political Caucus.org website and check us out. Maybe if they're interested in coming to the convention, like I said, we have a great national president, Donna Lent. Margot McNeil is our state president. Well, she has taken me up under her wing, and she's been a really, really good friend to me. And then Paula Wilmart is great also. And I'll just say this, if I want more African-American women to get involved with the National Women's Political Caucus, especially in the state of Missouri. But I also want to say that I want, you know, everyone that's involved in this organization to kind of find someone that really, really could use your help or really, really could use your training. Take them up under your wing and teach them what you know, because I would not be who I am today and feeling some of the things that I can do today dealing with advocating for women's rights and standing up and picketing and doing all that if it hadn't been for this group, some of the women in the group.
Tiana, thank you for your time today. Listeners, I want to tell you a few more things about Fannie Lou Hamer. During the course of her life, Hamer was given a Mississippi appendectomy. She was shot 16 times by the police. She was beaten with a bat by police. She was beaten until her left eye was left damaged. And she was beaten to the point of permanent damage to one of her kidneys. Yet she persisted. Thank you, Tiana.
And we made our match. I want to thank Jeff Humfeld, Molly Madden, and Christina Mann, among others, for making their pledges to Heartland Labor Forum. You can do that too, 888-931-0901. Tune in next week to the Heartland Labor Forum. We're going to be interviewing Herb Johnson, Still Kicking for Labor, and Eric Blank, Red State Revolt. We can't do the calendar this week because of lack of time. You can find it on our webpage at heartlandlaborforum.org. Thanks to tonight's engineer, Jen Zaman. Listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, a show by and about workers, our workplaces, and our labor movement. We are radio that talks back to the boss, and you can talk back too. Send us your workplace stories, news, and ideas for shows to heartlandlaborforumkkfi@gmail.com. Our website, where we archive shows and post our upcoming schedule, is heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here at 90.1 FM KKFI.
The common man's rights to be in the working class is good enough for me. We are the working class, and that's the Mississippi.